fragrance of the outrageous. Nurturing your entire body. Meditation is more than just closing the eyes, watching in. The real meditation begins now, with a partial open eye and inward attitude of silence. The heightened consciousness focus on the nostril. The presence of the Creator in the air that is nurturing the body. We don't breathe in Him. He breathes into us and sustains us. We have to become aware. He who is saying to us in our brains, I will not forget you, I will not forsake you. Through the air entering our nostrils, it's like being born, my cord is cut, but now you are conscious. Process occurring in you. As the body seems to dilate and constrict without any effort in your part, be ever conscious of the globe, the internal vibrancy passing through each cell. That vibrancy is the creative intelligence, the I Am presence in all of us. The very principle that Moses recognized, I am that I am. Eternal, ever present now. Sustaining all forms of life in creation. At the same time, allowing it to experience individuality. Allowing each form to experience intellect, programming from outside, through the ears, the eyes, vibrancy of the tissues. As you become conscious of the clothes on your body, under the clothes. That's what Christ meant. Someone has touched me. A unified field. Feel the unified field in everything around you. Feel the unified field surrounding you, enveloping you. Extend that feeling as far as the mind can conceive throughout the entire universe. No boundary line. Feel that energy healing and resolving all internal blockages. your sense of buoyancy, your sense of weightlessness. The more you identify with that sense of buoyancy, you are fulfilling the principle of energy equals to the mass times the velocity of light squared in your own organism. And that buoyancy starts to spread. Realize what Jesus said. Came that we may have life more abundantly. That feeling of life, that feeling of weightlessness, expanding out, is the life more abundant. As you listen more in the ears and then throughout all the cells, feeling dissolves into light. Light dissolves into sound. Music. Sound dissolves into appreciation, soul, God. Individuality dissolves into presence. Fulfilling, loving the Lord with all of your mind, all of the heart, all of the strength, and all the soul, and the neighbor, everything next to you, as yourself. Oneness. Center of focus. mandate of silence. In a hurry to identify objects. Let your eyes feel presence. Your eyes glow with love of presence. This is the instant of love described by the ancients called agape. Your agape. Not eros, not agitated. Let the eye feel. Same time, let the nose recognize the fragrance of the ayam in it. And the ears hear the vibrancy of the audible ice cream, sustaining it in a geometry called a body. Then move the geometry and see how light it feels. Because it has to achieve the ability to materialize and dematerialize it. That's energy equal to mass times velocity. Square, light square. It's a conscious encounter. No imagination. You have to work at the conscious level yourself. But you couldn't be given the information because you have to clean up the body. So coming before getting into initiation is all preparation. The awareness of the seven of one and how it works inside. So it is not an intellectual process, it's a biological process. Yet at the same time, it seems to give you a sense of peace that you can't explain to yourself why it's there. You don't feel to panic. That's what Jesus meant when he said, the peace I give, the world don't give. The world gives us 6 feet under the ground. But creative consciousness gives us strength in the peace. The quality to cope. Quality of being conscious to go through. So we're not here to judge the outward geometry, because that's like the costume in the old movie. The actor is inside consciousness. But above all, the actor is working towards his Oscar. So don't worry about the costume. The costume is there, but more than the costume is the internal process of identifying. But at the conscious level, because we have to get up and live in the world. So, when we get up, how long this feeling lasts with you in the waking state is called Nirvikalpa Samadhi, consciousness of God. In the moving state, mobile state. In every act, you are conscious of this identity. Then it will surprise you. If you're looking for all the miracles, it's there. Like one sister said, when you know God, all your good and lousy decisions are fulfilled. At the waking level. There are no sins. There are only decisions. We apply them or misapply them in reference to the situation. And when we apply them correctly, we flow. When they're misapplied, we repeat it over to correct it. So nobody's here to punish you. But the anguish is the punishment to do it over. That's the only punishment there is. If you don't do it over, then there's no compensation. That's grace. That's the reward that overrides the anguish of think something over. For that reason, all wise men tell us, free men all run of ourselves, when we understand how it's put together. Like who? The secret is locked up. In the waking, moving state. That's the uniqueness of it. Just like the cord plugged into that socket. If David don't pay his electricity, he ain't got no electricity. So if we don't run the God who belongs to God, we don't got no more coming in. Not sitting down so much and getting lost in the head. That's the start, that's the cleaning up. It's the opening up the eyes and becoming consciously aware of the interconnectedness of the cosmic physics, of how you put together. And in that simplicity, like a child, creative wonderment begins to play for you. Your intellect opens to be more specific, your heart opens to be more compassionate, and you begin to function more in the joyousness in the waking state. It's in the waking state, here and now, that this presence is. And what is so funny with it, we can't stick our finger and say, here it is. It's constantly impressing itself upon us. We have to become more aware of it. The more we are aware of this vibrancy, which is called I Am Presence, the more the brain and the ears operate in a deeper level. Yes, the living of it every day reinforces your identity with it. You see, it's the unified field, that's why they call it yoga, union with
the consciousness permeating the body at the waking conscious level. And the parasympathetic nerves sustain the mechanism all through the 24 hours, more and more in a conscious state. And therefore, the enlightened person doesn't sleep no more. The feeling of shutting down and disengaging from the environment to go in to revitalize is an illusion. That's the only time you're not loving God. You're always loving Him, even when your eyes are open up and swearing like hell and crazy and angry with everybody, you're still loving Him. Like children. So the point is, being conscious is the essence of it. You want to have that consciousness in a waking state, and its ability to vitalize you and replenish you at the conscious level. Not in the withdrawn, shut up level. That you're entitled to as a child. Going through the process of evolution out of the womb to the human adult form. But once you pass through and make the process of meditating to prepare the body to understand where it's going, then the bridge and the relationship begins to occur at the conscious level. And from your exposure to all people who have had any degree of enlightenment, you know, it's been 24 hours a day, they're all working. They never seem to be lacking energy. It isn't that they need energy or lack energy, it is that they're united with the principle of consciousness in the waking state and not associating anymore with consciousness in the non-waking state. That doesn't say you want to sleep, but the body will rest on its own in strange ways. At the same time, no tiredness seems to come. And even if you were feeling tired, the moment you lie down and close your eyes, suddenly you're replenished again. It's one of those phenomena of the atom. Because the body is storing certain atoms of oxygen to replenish consciously instead of unconsciously, and relying on the unconscious experience as a means to replenish. See, because God is conscious now, and the experience and realization is that. So all realized people who have ever gone through the process, they know the waking state is the accomplishment.
Does that mean they don't sleep? Or they don't
care? They don't really need it.
I see.
They don't really need it. The body really doesn't need it, because in 24 hours, if you see the biological clock of the organs and those who have taken solar nutrition, you'll see that you have an ascending and a descending function in each organ. Therefore, it's automatically time to do it. Replenish itself. So, because it's automatically time to replenish itself, it's automatically time to clean itself. Thus, phasing down what we call unconsciousness in the organism. The association of unconsciousness may predominate as a program pattern from the womb level of the child coming out and having to sleep, and the mother growing up, and then the responsibility of a parent to say, now tonight you go to bed. And for 18 years you live through that. These are all program patterns. But then one day you wake up and say, hey, I don't feel sleepy. I'm due. or you stay all night up without any reason. And that is kind of freaky because you can't seem to relate how this one night or one whole day you didn't feel sleepy. See? But then the association of having done it before it happened, you seem to want to go back, to want to shut down. That's the delusion of it. It tends to pull you back. But as you consciously apply the technique, which is repeating now, making the brain identify with the sonic statement. That's why they said prayer unceasingly. The love of the Lord is prayer unceasingly. Now, prayer unceasingly is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. There is no way that the brain, you understand, can stop this particular thing. So after a while, you break the habit and the associative connectedness with the unconscious from the child level that doesn't have anything to repeat inside. And so in initiation, you're given mantra or a word to repeat to get the brain into that rhythm of disassociating from words that tend to pull you back into the sleep state. Because you have to tell yourself you want to go to sleep. So you have to use the word, I want to go to sleep. And so the brain tends to pull back there from association. When the brain is free from the repetition of that input and associated with sonics that are going on inside to identify with the five forces of the body, and you know what those sounds are, they represent the crystalline level of your body, the liquid level of your body, the thermal, the gaseous, and the sonics in you. And once you identify with those five functions, that's why you call it five element law, in 24 hours, in a conscious waking state, your body starts taking over the relationship. One of the most outstanding evidence is a sense of buoyancy and joyousness seems to begin to permeate you. All that old associated pattern of feeling left out starts to leave. And you begin to see what Jesus, you become like one of these, again, the child wonderment with the adult understanding, living in an organism now geared to a conscious relationship. And it's the accomplishment in the waking state to him that overcome it, I'll not send forth a second time. What are you overcoming? The pull of the unconscious, to go back into the unconscious, to disassociate. How could you be loving God with all of your mind if you're going to become unconscious? See what the commandment is? It's not so much a commandment, it's an understanding of what you're doing. The love is to relate to God with all your, with his life, with all of your mind. So that's conscious. Waking state, active movement, not in a hurry, but conscious interaction with life, all. So that's every instant. And there is no drain, energy can't drain itself, but our previous fixations, program patterning, makes us go through that feeling. As we disengage more and more from it, and that's what the repetition of the sonics, the sound, whole names inside of you, these sounds reinforce the five elements. You begin to center back, and that's with all the mind, centering back on the sonics, which you use to communicate with. And with all of your heart, that's the pumping. And strength is the respiration. Those are, that's what the word means. Heart is the pump. Strength is respiration. You don't have no strength without respiration. And with all your soul, that is sense of identity. Because man is soul, he doesn't have soul. Therefore, his sense of identity or sense of individuality, which is his endowment, to be separate from, pick up your cross and follow, don't pick up mine, I can't take yours. So that's a sense of identity, individuality. You don't have it, it's you. And neighbor, anything next to, as, not like, as. That's the same thing, they have to work through it. So you can't own them, they can't own you. You can only what? Exchange. As in the exchanging, the respect, the integrity, and the joy, the enhancement. Because it's the God that is in everything, playing the role of that forgetfulness. Remembrance. I forget, I go to sleep, or I remember. And it plays this till you start identifying more and more on the conscious level.
Which factor comes first? You stated that we have a mechanical, a chemical, and a magnetic body that functions together, and then we could live, say, forever. Now, is that, do we have to acquire that balance first, or does that come when we get the evidences? Am I clear to say?
No, it isn't. We set out with this idea that we're trying to acquire. Does a cup acquire a cup of liquid?
Mm-hmm.
Or is the liquid poured into the cup?
Okay, all right.
We are already created as a form, and the air is pressurized into us to make us constrict and dilate and be a living organism. Now, so we are not reaching out to acquire anything. What we are trying to realize is how this principle is sustaining itself.
When does that balance come?
It comes as you begin to withdraw from the unconscious relationship of sleep and identify with the conscious relationship of the now living. The more you disengage with the association of sleep and the unconsciousness of yourself and associate with the livingness of yourself in the waking state, this particular balancing of understanding starts to grow. In other words, it's like the chicken starting to hatch. The brain with the understanding of, and this is Paul to say, I rebuke you in your rejoicing, for I live and die daily in the Lord. The moment he quit falling asleep and associating with forgetfulness, I was looking within that category for miraculous powers, he realized he wasn't getting any real true development. So he had to quit that too. So he made a remark by saying, I rebuke you in your rejoicing. That was anyone who felt that was where the full realization was. But if full realization was not there, in the gift of the Spirit or in the withdrawal of sleep, it was in the fruit of the Spirit, the waking state, the living and dying daily, meaning moment to moment, conscious encounter. That portion of yourself now taking over at the awareness level. So it's not practicing meditation that is the goal, it's living the moment of oneness is the goal. And so that's how come the word meditation is mental energy, it's in the very structure of the word, directing individual thought activities or actions towards an internal observation and oneness. The observation is that you're disengaging from the unconscious level, and the oneness is identifying with the waking level of noumena or nature, truth, your structure. So you are living a process, not practicing a process. But you have to start someplace to get the attitude and move into it. So that's why it's not possible to go too far at one level without the initiation. Initiation is the key to the ignition of the car. And prior to that, it's like being a passenger in the car, wishing to get behind the wheel. And when you do get behind the wheel, which is initiation, is to get you conscious of certain operational functions in your mechanism that will wean you away from the unconscious identity of yourself to the conscious identity of yourself and the focus of your energy, not on the unconscious level for replenishment, but at the conscious level for the replenishment. Years ago, I fell asleep yesterday and went deep into all those practices, but then I could realize that I wasn't getting any further than there in focusing on the unconscious level for the replenishment. And then after a while, the body then began to replenish. Immunity, the endorphins all began to work. You'll find that science becomes very, very obvious. You may not even read a book on science and suddenly one day you're quoting science and people, where do you get your education from? This brain, that 9/10 portion that was asleep from the association of the unconscious part, is no longer relating at unconscious level now. It's starting to shift to allow all this data to flow through you. So wise men aren't people who got books. New realized persons what? An awakening up of his whole entire chemistry and organism and letting it flow through.
I have a question. Soon after you started talking about going without sleep, something snapped in me and I had to use extreme will to keep awake. What happened?
That's Delta.
Well, that was Delta. Okay, because I had to fight.
Yeah. The beta level, I'm talking to you, rapid eye movement. Alpha is a certain withdrawal into level of relaxation. Then theta is the play of all kind of geometry in my brain, wanting to fit it to the proper context, called the dream level. Then there's a sudden sensation of drowsiness. The Swami is not a person who is given a title by some individual. It's a test. The test of going down to Delta to stay in it for 15 minutes. That's where the word means Swami, Master of the Self. The first 7.5 of the Delta level is referred to as biological schizophrenia. Therefore, a schizophrenic and a saint on his way to sainthood or a person on his way to realization are in the same category. But the schizophrenic may think he's arriving in this wonderful save the world feeling. He's going to go to save the world and walk in front of a car and try to stop. But if he isn't there as yet, the car will run over him and have to bury him. But the realized person now, knowing he's not there, he's working his way through that level. So the first 7.5 minutes, he feels he can help the world, but then he may not be ready, and he has to go to the next 7.5 minutes, called the night of the soul, where everything cuts off. There's no schizophrenia, there's nothing there, and it's total blank. It's that last 7.5 minutes to make 15 minutes of silence in the soul that gives you mastery. You've got to drop down. And you may think it's a bottomless pit, but it's only 7.5 minutes. in your chemistry of your body. But you go down there, pass through the 4.5 cycles of the second of the brain, and then you're totally 15 minutes in there, and that is Delta. Now, anyone who has arrived there will recognize you no matter where they are, because you're operating now on the same wavelength. So, and if you're not there, they know you're ready. So you can't give yourself the title of Swami, that's not valid. You can use that if you want to say, I'm a minister, but so not really. The real thing is the test. Another person who has that, a and arrive there, they can spot it in you when you're there, because you're already tuning in on that frequency. That's the unified field. Wherever you are in the unified field, that's where the yogi said, we can know who you are, where you are. And you can't hide it no more. You're in the unified field. Then, at that 15-minute drop down, you have two speeds. They're sitting down, non-moving state, and the getting up, moving state. So the first stages of it is called Savilka, so the non-moving, immobile. And then the next state is called Nirvikalpa, or mobile. You can function in the mobile state with that 15 minutes of inward suspension. And you have to go for that state at least a minimum of 7 years, working up to the next 45 minutes, which makes 1 hour. As soon as you reach the hour in the delta, every Parahamsa know you. No matter where they are in the para beyond the pull now of the 15 in the full signet function of the brain. So the brain is vibrating in the unified field at 1 full hour. And then they call now. Then the next level up is what they call the cities, the actual forces that direct. You don't direct it, because if you try to direct it, then that's the ego coming back again. You're looking for powers. You get fooled there. That's where Paul is saying, I rebuke you, rejoice. That you go past that state now into what is called the ascended master, and that's 12 hours in the delta, and it's in the waking active state. Then manifested master avatara is 24 hours. They're always in delta. They may come out now and then just to satisfy the student, to give the student encouragement, but they function most of the time in that. Now the resurrected master is one who masters the omega now, the next level down, which is death. And he has a choice. At that level, he can leave the body for you to examine. So you don't have any bereavement that he's gone. The body is there, non-decomposing. Or he can take it with him. That is the materializing, dematerializing at will. And he will visit you, not when you want him, but when you need him. And he will give you enough physical confirmation of his ability to come and go in the two speeds of light, visible and invisible radius. That doesn't say he's non-existent as a mass, but he is a mass that is working in two speeds for the first time, the visible speed and the invisible speed, which is called materializing and dematerializing at will. But to give you the validation of his accomplishment there, and what you are working to locked up in yourself at a conscious level, is everything he touches at that visit will be impressed with non-decomposition. So they usually eat food to satisfy you that they're not trying to play in your brain, and this is not mediumship. This is actual communion with the saint and the resolving of mistakes produced by incorrect decisions and application. That's all the job they got. To come back, to give you the validation of what is awaiting you in your own atomic structure, and they will eat solid food with you, so you're not dreaming up any imagination, and then they'll tell you for your own mind-blowing experience, keep a piece and see the rat. Because, you know, human beings are still going to want to test it, but that's valid, that's how they have to work. And
is this the explanation?
Yes, right, exactly. The accepting of yourself more and more in the waking state and disengaging from the non-waking or unconscious state of yourself. The unconscious state is programmed into us because you have to be born and we have to be told by the parents to go to sleep and do all these things. So that has a tremendous input on the mechanism. It takes time for you to actually disengage from it. And what tends to pull you back there is the words we use. I gotta go to sleep tonight, or I gotta go. And so we already shut down with expectancy, forcing the body to disassociate. But if you don't use those statements anymore, and you use the, that's why they gave the mantras, the ancient days, or the sonics to release the brain, rosary and all these things, but to release the brain from identifying with sonics that tends to make it want to shut down. And so when you repeat the five holy names, this tends to keep the brain associating with the wakeful state. And we know the holy names only represent the five elements that are comprising you. This five element law disengages by conscious repetition of it from the unconscious level of yourself to keep you focused in the conscious level of yourself.
Someone said it takes 21 days to make that transcendental.
Yeah. This dark night, okay, the 7.5 minutes.
Yeah.
There's no geometry,
no
numerics, nothing.
No. No alphabet, nothing.
No alphabet.
It's just.
And it's almost like there's no consciousness.
Right.
And then after that, then you pull through.
When you do go the full 7.5 minutes through, at the end of the 7.5 minutes, it's like you ever go into a theater and the place is totally dark, and you're sitting down there, and all of a sudden the curtain opens up, and the whole chorus and everything is right there. Play, that's exactly what the sonics does to you. It pushes right through your whole mechanism. Every cell in the mechanism is resonating now. Within the helix of the spine, which they call the DNAs and RNAs, which are otherwise known as the Kundalini or Holy Spirit. This descent of spirit, this descent of the sonics into the form is a cosmic manifestation of the 15 minutes. The whole place is sonics. The light is secondary to the sonics. The light will take three colors, very predominantly a gold ring, a blue background, and a five-pointed star looking like a dove rushing towards you. That's its act. And the actual communion of the saint would be any realized master or your own personal relationship. You may see yourself looking back at yourself. So therefore I am God, not ego, but the I am principle is you. Then that will start to narrow down into music. And the whole body is first in it at the 15 minutes. But then after that, everything begins to be like a convex vision. It seems to be transparent. I remember when the Swami who initiated me, the Swami, Anand Swami, and he told me his experience. He was a friend of Mahatma Gandhi, and he helped Gandhi in the war against the trying to get freedom for India. And he went to jail and everything. And when he was a young man, at 14, he got initiated by his guru. And all his friends would have wonderful experiences, but he never had no experience. All you could see was a big black head, nothing in there. And so he went through his own entire life with Gandhi, came out, he was married, he lost his first two kids, then he remarried again, and had business in the newspaper with success. And then he was retiring at 65, and he wanted to go and see his teacher, who was still alive in the mountain. Well, when he was 14 years of age, his teacher was 45 when he got initiated by the teacher. So now he's 65. You can imagine how old the teacher is living in the mountain. So he rises up in the mountain, and the teacher's there. He didn't want to tell me that his teacher was in a state of meditation. This teacher was there, and I looked up. And the teacher said, "What do you want?" He said, "Master," he's kissing the ground. He said, "Out of respect for you, I've been meditating for years, but I've never seen anything, and I know you initiate a lot of my friends. They saw wonderful things, but me, I never had nothing." So he said, the teacher said, "Look, get the hell out of nothing. Get out of here." He drove him out of the place. "Don't come back." And he went outside and he looked out around the sky and he sat down there wondering. And again he said, out of respect for his teacher, he closed his eyes to meditate again. And he says, "Have you ever seen 4th of July, Mr. Lee?" I said, "Yeah, it was a flashing sky." And all that, he said, "Well, my head became like 4th of July. With my eyes open, my eyes shut, everything was 4th of July. The mountains disappeared, but I didn't know where I was sitting. I thought I was a big firecracker." Just erupt. He said, "For the first time, I understood what 15 minutes was going on in my mind." He said, and I said, "Swami, has it ever left you?" He says, "No, it doesn't leave you." He said, "But from that day, I couldn't sleep either." So he was trying to give me a subtle ways, but I was getting into
it. May we be healed of the sleep fixation? I'm still struggling to stay awake from 3 to
4. Don't rush it. Let me point out one thing about the process. Really, we don't have anything to do other than clean up our act. Because Creator made us and became us. See, we don't know that. We got all kind of programs given to us as kids, handed down for centuries from different groups, and we come into it at a critical point in time. It's called the sorting out between the agricultural language and the technical language. The breakaway from the guilt syndrome to the responsibility, commitment, action of life. We're at that moment, 40 more years, is a new age or a Aquarian age where you're going to get up and stand on your own 2 feet. You can't expect any something for nothing attitude. And nobody's going to be nursemaiding you. In your spiritual life, you're nursemaiding yourself. G-U-R-U, Guru. You're going to look at yourself and have enough of the laws of physics to confront you to live a conscious spiritual life. See what I mean? So, this is where we are actually coming to. We're coming to the realization that what we grew up with and lived as unconscious states, those conditions will slowly phase down as we clean up the bodies. So that's why the only command was ever given to man, cleanliness is next to God, because cleanliness is God. As you get back into this synchronization of watching yourself and being not to rush it, it'll come on its own as you practice the meditation first of closing the eyes and then switching into the actual livingness of it with the eyes open. The transition, the actual cleaning will go on. You see, you're cleaning the body or making a transition from shutting down to a wakefulness. And it's a transition of energy from where you depended on shutting down to replenish you without knowing what is going on, to switch over to open up, be aware for it to replenish you. But that's a process you have to live. It's nothing to be afraid of or be in a hurry to get. It's something to recognize.
Did we wake up and tell ourselves?
Hmm?
And
Yes, that is true, because a Catholic mystic monk did some research after reading the autobiography of a yogi given to him by a friend. He went into all kind of research work, checking out even concepts on suggestion and hypnotic processing, what we're actually doing, and to come to the realization that there is no hypnotic action in a conscious control. It is that you are identifying with actual laws of physics for the first time that are there within your structure and operate with it at the conscious level. So whatever you have told yourself as a child, or what has been told to you, that's a part of the process. Now as you become more interested in clearing up between being sick, and it takes sickness to move us towards our true nature. Health is never going to move you to your true nature. If you never got a day sick from the time you were born to now, you wouldn't be sitting in this room. There's no reason, right? There was no reason for you to inquire into yourself. But some irritation, some functioning that block that particular reality has set you in search for yourself. And that's why the way nature has it set up, it's by the horoscope, which is individuality. It's the Saturn return in the horoscope. That's why the three wise men knew when Jesus and they went about looking for him. Solomon was a wise man too, and all these kings all knew these laws of astrology thousands of years ago, and today now it's becoming the layout of your progressional growth. Your first Saturn return is within your first 30 years, and Saturn primarily means only to discipline yourself. So in the layman's language, it's 30 years to muck up and 30 years to clean up, the second Saturn return. So it turns out 50-50 even. Then the rest is all yours, because you have the maturity now of the understanding from disengaging from the unconscious part of you, which is the first 30 years where you didn't know and thought you had to be. Then the next 30 years we're cleaning up, that you don't have to be unconscious. Then that transitional change, that transitional realization leaves you open now for all the rest of the creative consciousness in the now. Yes, no, maybe. In certain cultural heritage, the child seldom questions the parent's integrity as to do something or refuse to do something. In the Eastern tradition, centuries ago, you never questioned your parent and they said something, you did it. And the older person above you told you something, you did it. So it's what we call the obedience to the pecking order, which has a value in the framework of your health. When you come to clean up your mechanism, if you listen and you're consistent in listening and you never deviate in your listening, this particular quality of healing is very close by to your spoken word. So the teachers in those days realized that their culture had a value of making a person respond therapeutically quicker than he would be today in a mechanical society, where he's going to question and block most of the information. So that tradition has a value from the standpoint is you don't have to be sick. I tell you this, but they get that already programmed because they don't doubt or question anyone older than them or anyone who is going to give them any type of information. So for that reason, the Eastern man benefits right away in his particular illness level and to whatever he wants to experience to satisfy his need, it comes out quicker in the atomic structure of the mass. Now, so there's less resistance to the effects of a spoken word in the mechanism. You come now into today's society, the transitional society, we find that there's more resistance, and because we've been fooled a lot over the years, and we don't know which is right and which is wrong, which is valid or not, so we question. And as we question, then it seems to get delayed to satisfy the transition. So we are locked into a period requiring logical reason together with conviction and responding to instruction without question. Now, if we respond to instruction without question, we would get instant correction. But since we are evolving logic and reason, and not to take things for granted because we've been fooled a lot by those who use that technique to fool us, we can't trust now. Something inside of us rebels or locks back, and therefore we don't respond as quickly to the instruction correcting because of logical reason evolving through the process. Therefore, it takes a little longer, and the amount of resistance that is built up to be phased down. The teacher of Babaji knew this was going to happen in the West. Therefore, he told his disciple Lahiri, "Man in the West going to need somebody to work with them." And so Yogananda came as a representative of the masters in the East within a framework of educational background, one who would believe and at the same time one who would question. So he had both kind of attitudes locked into him. And if he resolved his own illnesses, he would be a more competent teacher of the understanding of obedience and logical analysis, combining the two qualities. We want to believe and obey from our heritage, but we don't want to be fooled because a lot of people pull tricks on us. So we don't want to buy a pig in a bag without looking at it first. So that's all right. So we have a teacher who came with that kind of understanding to make us know, okay, you hear the hole, you can look inside of the plaster and see it's really a pig in the bag. And that's basically why we are in that process. The logic, resistance, analytical attitude, and the acceptance without question from our heritage. You see, combining the two now, we are evolving a more rounded out person in the process. So, the master has left since 1952, but his disciples and those who had to work through the process, and mostly people who had to have both sides of the coin. I was born into an area with, but you had to follow what your parents tell you or they smack the hell out of you. In this society, they call it child abuse. Today we call it apparent abuse. Because we resist so much to be abusing the parent. So where does the fine line between child abuse and parent abuse? So that's the combination. So it's gathering both sides of our nature, the respect for the parents' position and those who are older, at the same time your own self-integrity to analyze and apply by testing. That's what has emerged after Yogananda left. A lot of people now coming to the East to teach, or those are evolving here, are evolving the combination of the belief plus analysis, and then emerging as realized people. We are combining the two. So Dr. Lewis would say, America offers you this, to be in the world like a scientist and out of the world like a saint, in your own room with a little gadget called an air conditioner. You can turn on any temperature you want and get in there and practice. Because that will either interface with the temperature. You see, outward action needs a cool room or a warm room. So we see two types of culture. In India, it's very hot. So to pursue the spiritual path is to sit down and close the eyes and calm yourself to the hot temperature. In China, where it's a little colder, they get up and they do this. They are fighting cold with their movement of their body. So their technique is for what?
Physical.
Physical, right. So now when we come over here, we combine the two, you know, by turning on the air conditioner, making it harder cool to shoot, which techniques you want to use, but you get the same result, coping with the situation.
How may we get our bodies in more alignment, more acid-alkaline balance, that this idea?
That's in the eating again, and one of the ideal things you have in this is the nitrazine paper or litmus paper that you can buy and check your saliva pH. That we owe that a lot to Mir Kushi, who pointed out that the body was 80-20. And so when we came along with the litmus paper validating it, we now have something to relate to every day that we can check. But in the eating, that's why you eat solar 21 and lunar 7, giving you an acid-alkaline balance. You see, the human body is not 100% sperm, nor 100% ovum, nor 100% alkaline, nor 100% acid. When a person is pregnant, 9 times out of 10, they're going to go to that refrigerator, eat the craziest combination you'll ever see. And the doctor will tell you, fine, but you don't do it every day. You do it at certain intervals of the month. So, for that reason, in pursuing an inward life, you have guidelines now. You can take the litmus paper and check if you're too alkaline or too acid. And then you can put in the food that will compensate to restore the balance. Now, if you're too acid, you need alkaline food. And if you're too alkaline, you need acid food. Now, you have both in solar eating and in lunar eating. Solar eating is 99% of the time alkaline from eating on time within the growth cycle. And lunar eating is acid most of the time from eating the same food out of time. See? So it's a very chemistry. A little is medicine, too much is toxic. And at the right time and with prayer, it all goes through clear.
Two practitioners?
So if you get the litmus paper, the best of your check.
Oh, I know, I'm too acid. If you can load at 4 right. o'clock and I did celery and the lettuce and the...
If you're too acid, then the last few days were your lunar period. You can actually take something to out of time cycle to balance it out. So, in the morning, you know, in fact, first, do you know your blood type? that's the most important thing to know. Because like driving a car, I'm telling you have a Ford, and I go and see you have a Chevrolet. See, this is one of the most important part of the pursuit of the spiritual life. Years ago in the Eastern country, we took things for granted because we programmed to accept without questioning. We're living in a society where we are questioning, and we can't always accept without question, so we have to back up and validate a little. And that's not bad, that's good, because you don't want to guess. Yogananda would say, to believe and not to know leads to superstition. To believe and know leads to freedom. See what I mean? So to combine the two, you believe in certain, but you know what is actually going on, this is freedom. Then just to believe, and then when you don't really know, you get fanatical, and that can be very, very dangerous to yourself. So for that reason, find out what your blood type is, then you know what you're working with. Years ago, I didn't know my blood type. I wanted to be a vegetarian. I wanted to find out I was making myself more sick by not knowing my blood type. And then when I did find out my blood type, it's not possible for my blood type to be 100% vegetarian. I have to compensate, not for my brain's sake, but for my stomach or health's sake. See, Timothy in the Bible was having the same problem. He was trying to be 100% pure vegetarian, traveling from country to country, spreading the word, and getting sick. And his teacher, Paul, realizing that the boy is not going to get any well, because he's too overly centered into one thing, so he said, take a little wine for your stomach's sake. And that was a letter he was writing him. He knew the boy was not balancing his chemistry properly, and not for the brain. So a little of the foods that tend to balance out is what the body needs. So when you know your blood type, you're in a better position to regulate the chemistry. See, for instance, sometimes I get too alkaline. And in order to get a quick acid, I go eat some donut. Good old-fashioned white flour donut. So let me put it this way. Unrefined foods make you alkaline. Refined foods make you acid. There is a good guide in terms of the food. So a piece of white bread is not bad, but too much no good. See?
So whole grains.
Yeah. And too much whole grain is no good either, because you're going to get too alkaline. So you have to eat one piece of slice of the refined product. And that's why you have the option in rice. You can eat the brown rice, which is alkaline, and the white rice, which is acid. And that's what they did thousands of years ago for the emperors, when they were getting too alkaline and didn't know how to solve their problem. And then when they did refine, they take the husk off and make white rice. Today in China, most people go to China and they see them serving white rice. And the brown rice is for the peasants. But the peasant is healthy than the guy who is in the office, because why? He's overindulging in the white rice. So, but you need both. So, a little refined flour or grain, just as a pure. And so you only need it around the full moon time to stabilize. If you're too acid right now, then the quickest alkaline would be orange. It's acid, but alkaline in reacting. So it goes in acid, but it reacts alkaline when it's inside. See, I had the same. My type of blood may be too alkaline. I tried for years not to touch any meat or anything. Not even egg or. And I got so alkaline that I had cancer. And when the doctors identified, thank you. And I realized when the person that don't indulge, and the person who indulges have the same sickness, it's not knowledge, it's ignorance. So I had to go and study the thing correctly, I notice it's not quantity, but a little is medicine. So I have to disengage from the non-tissue eating to put in a little tissue. So when I started off with an egg to get back my acidity. And so in the body, if you're too alkaline, you do need something to give you back acid. And if you're too acid, you need something alkaline. Well, here's a funny phenomenon. People of certain blood type, like mine, type O, we're born into homes where we eat a lot of meat. And you end up what? Trying to avoid eating it. You don't want to touch it. You want to be nice and then you end up getting sick. And people who are born in homes that are type A, that can live on fiber and fruits, they end up what? Craving the meat. Yeah. So it's a little of each side of the scale that balances up. Well, it's a very practical thing to know. In case of emergency, you get cut or hurt.
Yeah.
How do you find out if you're supposed to lab?
Everybody looks great. You want to see everybody. I'm glad to see everybody.
You're looking pretty good yourself.
Thank you. I eat on time. Somebody asked me, what do you do for an occupation? I said, I eat on time.
Eat on time.
That's my occupation.
Did you stop and fly stamps up to
the top? All we have to do is just eat.
Nice and cool up there. Must have been nice.
No, well, I came through there a couple of weeks ago, going up to Calgary. It was nice.
What? Eating?
We were in California a short time ago, and we kind of stumbled upon the Encinitas retreat.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
I've noticed that.
We went in and walked around through the meditation gardens, everything they were working on. Some of the fish ponds and stuff there. It's just gorgeous.
Yeah, this is beautiful.
And they bought the piece of property right next door. It looked like a pretty good sized building in the state, and they're converting that to that part of the self relocation center now, too, right on the bluff looking out of the front. It is just gorgeous. It's going to be for people in there on retreat.
The lady who was working in the office wasn't about to really believe that we were Kriya initiates because she had never heard of you. And I even could tell her your Swami name, and she said, no, I've never heard of him.
Oh, a lot of them never heard of me. Well, most of them came after. But I wasn't involved in it. See, Yogananda was alive. I was living in Canada.
In Montreal. I read about you in the past.
Yeah.
Kriyananda mentioned you.
Right.
In the book. Why is it that, is it because this other Swami initiated you that you, the last appellation is Saraswati, and Yogananda's is the
Giri
branch?
That's right.
Or Giri?
Giri, right.
Even though you were a student of Yogananda.
You see, Yogananda passed away, and I didn't reach that stage yet to warrant getting initiated into Swamihood because I wasn't there yet.
Oh.
I was working my way to that. And I haven't met any other Giri over the years. And so when Anand Swami came through, Anand Swami was the legitimate head of the Arya Samaj of the Swami order. He was the leading head at the time. I would just say he was the Pope at the time for the Swami order. And he was on tour. And I was initiated by him personally. Otherwise, I'd have gone to, had to go to India or go to some sort of Swami order to be initiated. But then he came through, he initiated me into Swami. And then he gave me the name Nityananda Saraswati because he was of the Saraswati order. But you see, the thing is this. When I came in contact with Yogananda, I knew of Saraswati principles of growth in South America. And
is that the wisdom?
Mm-hmm. And he was already involved in the Giri order. And from that, I knew as a child, I would never belong to no order than the Saraswati order, even before I met Yogananda, I was looking for the Saraswati order. And when I wanted to go and see him when he was alive, he told me, don't come and see me, stay where you are and practice. And years went by, and I had thought I'd never get to meet any of the Saraswati order. I met other Swamis from different orders, and but none of them would were in the position to initiate people into Swami order. Even when I met Shivananda, and he was a disciple of Shivananda in India, who was alive at the time of Yogananda, he was not a Saraswati order. Muktananda was not a Saraswati order either. And so, when Anand Swami came and he initiated me, then I found that he was